This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. The newly established Honors College at FGCU is hosting a speaker event for its students tonight to drive up interest in a proposed partnership with a non-governmental organization that's serving the medical, ecological, and social needs of the Peruvian Amazon. We'll talk about that in the second half of our show today. But first, development in Southwest Florida is not all about the roads and bridges and buildings. There's a lot of thought that goes into development of vegetation along roadways and in yards and throughout parking lots, where trees provide that ultimate oasis and a patch of shade. But now, a month and a half after Hurricane Irma roared through, many are looking at a blank slate and wondering about what to put in place of trees that were taken down by high winds. And some are blaming those trees for power being out for more than a week in some places. Here with some ideas on replacing trees lost to hurricanes is Pete Smith. He's the Urban Forestry Program Manager with the Arbor Day Foundation. Pete, thanks for joining our show today.
Well, thanks for having me, Julie.
Also here to talk about trees and some that are specifically equipped to handle our weather and possibly provide fruit is Charlie Thibodeau. He's a tree specialist with ECHO. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
We're also joined by Karen Ryan with the Lee County Electrical Cooperative to talk about how trees interact with power lines. Karen, thanks for talking with us again.
Thanks for having me.
We are talking about trees, power lines, and development. Do you have a question for our experts? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU, using the hashtag of GCL. So, Pete, this hasn't been a great hurricane season for trees in the United States. The Arbor Day Foundation just announced that it has a goal of replanting 5 million trees in Texas, Florida, and Puerto Rico. How does the foundation approach recovery efforts after such devastating storms like this?
Well, it has been a terrible season here in the United States and in Puerto Rico as well. And, you know, we've been working with the community tree recovery program for about 5 years now. And we have just begun this new campaign really pretty quickly after the hurricanes that we've had, in order to galvanize citizens around the country and some of our corporate partners to put the resources in place where we can get 5 million new trees planted over the next 5 years.
So you're looking at 5 years to make this happen.
It's going to take that long, and I would say for communities that are recovering from hurricanes, that's pretty typical, 5 to 10 years for residents there, for the city to really recover their tree canopy. Maybe not all the canopy that got lost, but at least replacing the trees that people want to replant.
So why is it important to do this?
Well, I think trees are a critical infrastructure for our cities. They cool our cities. They provide needed shade. They're shady spots for citizens to walk and to recreate. They save our homes energy when we plant them in the right place around our home. And I think perhaps the biggest challenge following a hurricane is that the location of newly planted trees is really important, to pay attention to where the overhead power lines are so that future storms don't have the same kind of impact where trees are bringing down power lines.
Exactly. And Karen Ryan with LCEC, trees are a really important part of any urban landscape. So how do power companies view these trees? Are they kind of a nemesis or a partner?
No, definitely a partner. As Pete said, you know, they provide shade and recreation, and he's right, they do help reduce your energy bill and also help fight climate change. But he also hit the nail on the head. The first and foremost, it's important to plant the right tree in the right place. Always look up and make sure you don't plant below power lines, and then always call 811 to mark underground utilities before you plant.
I wanted to ask you about that. A lot of people had questions after the hurricane saying, well, why aren't our power lines underground so that if a hurricane, which kind of tends to happen here in Florida, if that does happen, then we don't have trees taking out the power lines. Were trees to blame for a lot of the power outages, first of all, and second of all, what about putting power lines underground?
Trees are always a source of pain during a storm, not just hurricanes, but any storm. And it's mainly because they haven't been trimmed properly, and they haven't been pruned properly. a lot of people think that putting the lines underground is a silver bullet, but there's a few. It does have benefits to have the lines underground. First of all, it's very expensive to do that, so sometimes it's cost prohibitive. But even if you can get past the cost, here in our area, and especially Irma was a perfect example, we had floodwaters. So when the lines are underground, eventually they come up somewhere. And if we have to work on the lines that are underground and the hole is filled with water, it presents a problem because water and electricity don't mix. So you have to wait till the water's pumped out and drained before you can work on the lines. The other thing that we saw, many of our customers do have underground lines, and trees were still not kind to the underground lines because a lot of trees, I'm sure that you all noticed driving through the area, were uprooted. And those roots sometimes spread, you know, very far and wide, and they would rip the underground lines out of the ground, yeah, all the way up to the meter. So there are benefits to underground, but it really is not a silver bullet when it comes to hurricane.
Yeah, everybody's looking for one of those, though, because, you know, nobody liked having that power out. So, and the roots, I know that they were responsible for a lot of the wastewater lines that got pulled out of the ground, too. So the roots, you can't ignore those because we saw them just all come right up out of the ground. So and then Charlie Thibodeau with Echo, are there trees that you might recommend in Southwest Florida that are able to withstand hurricanes that may perform a little bit better? Because I know you know the area specifically.
All right. I think it has less to do with the variety of tree that you want to grow, especially if it's a fruit tree, and more like what the other two speakers said, maintaining a well-pruned tree and making sure the site selection isn't near something that can take it down should it fall over. But what we'd like to encourage at Echo is trying to maintain your fruit trees between 10 to 15 feet, lower wind speeds for the lower tree, open the canopy up so there's better airflow through there, and a shorter tree makes it easier to pick the fruit. So that way it ensures that you get to eat it as opposed to a critter.
The raccoons.
Yeah.
Or after they rot and fall to the ground.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, well, fruit trees may be a nice alternative when you're replacing the trees that have come out of the ground because of the hurricane. Because as you said, you need to keep them fairly short. And when they're shorter, they have less of a possibility of falling on a power line.
Absolutely.
That sounds like a silver bullet.
There we go. Everybody has fruit trees. So, yeah, you were saying?
I was just going to say, if sometimes folks will want to know about, you know, what makes a good shade tree, and a lot of different fruit trees that we sell, some of the more vigorous mango trees make excellent shade trees, but one should really think about planting it maybe 25 to 30 feet away from the house instead of right up against it in case of a storm like we had recently.
Yeah, exactly, because there are still windows that could become vulnerable. We have a comment coming in from Susan. Susan, what would you like to say?
I'd like to be an advocate for trees and all plants. We think of the green world of trees and plants as something nice to look at, but the important thing really is that through the process of photosynthesis, trees and plants give us oxygen and food. And without plants and a proliferation of plants taking in carbon dioxide and breathing out oxygen for us, there would be no life on Earth. So plants of all sorts, but trees especially, are very, very important.
And that's a point that Pete brought up earlier. And Pete with the Arbor Day Foundation, apparently you have a saying where you work, which is right tree, right place, which was also echoed by Karen Ryan. What exactly does that mean?
Well, we have a wonderful graphic that's been around for decades now on our website and through our Treeline USA companies, utility companies use this all the time to really promote the idea of planting the right tree in the right place. And in general, when we're talking about utilities, we want to try to keep those trees far enough away from utilities, structures, or other important features where they can't do damage as they grow. People sometimes forget how big trees can get in terms of their mature size. So we offer a lot of resources on how to find out how big will my tree grow for this particular species. But it's a critical thing, and by right tree, we're talking about What is the species? What is its growth habit? Where are we going to plant it near our home or near our neighbor's home that might impact it? And especially underneath utilities. And cities and utility companies are often in the business of managing the trees that are out near our streets. And when we're planting the wrong tree, all we're doing is increasing costs and increasing the risk for power lines and other infrastructure.
And Karen, I wanted to ask you, with Lee County Electrical Cooperative, is there any kind of communication between electric companies and municipalities about what plants work where? For example, it seems like utility lines kind of follow highways and byways, and then they want to always line those with pretty trees. How does that communication work in that kind of planning?
We do try to work with our local municipalities, and in fact, it's been quite a few years ago, but there was one locally, and they did a medium beautification project, and they were beautiful, beautiful trees, and I don't remember what species, but they didn't consider them mature size. So when we talked to them, they actually came right in there and traded those trees out for trees that now are beautiful, and they live cohesively with the power lines. And we did not have any problems with them during Hurricane Irma. The other thing, too, I was thinking of this when Pete was talking, is we do have a responsibility to manage the vegetation along the utility easements. And that is, we utilize the American National Standards Institute, ANSI standards, and most utilities do. And I'm sure that you've seen a tree that is trimmed properly. It's with a V shape in the utility easements. It's not pretty.
No.
It's
yeah.
not always pretty, but it's trimmed that way for reliability. And also, according to these standards, it helps the tree, survival of the tree. But that's because, someone didn't plant the right tree in the right place.
Yeah, so instead of just taking out the tree, what you do is you go in and you cut it into a V-shape.
Exactly. And there's some trees, a palm tree, there's really no way to trim a palm tree.
Yeah, no.
There's no good way to trim it.
Yeah, there's right. no. That's not going to become a V no matter how hard you try.
Right.
Or maybe a ponytail palm if you kind of get it to look like a Dr. Seuss character. But, I was wondering about that when you have trees, and I've seen them being cut around in that way. And you say that that's actually not bad for the tree?
No. With these, and I will let, Pete and Charlie talk about that, too, because they're the experts when it comes to that. But the American National Standards Institute, they have developed this working with arborists to ensure that the trees are trimmed so that they can survive a major trimming like that. And professional tree services also know how to do this. I'm not saying that someone who knocks on your door and wants to trim your trees doesn't know the American standards, but it's possible that they might not. You should always hire a professional tree service.
Yeah, we have talked with an arborist here on our show a number of times, and the importance of hiring a professional arborist is pretty important, because you could lose a really nice mature tree, and you could end up with some liability issues on your hands if the person isn't properly insured. And Charlie, I wanted to ask you a question. That particular arborist that I was talking about, he mentioned that a lot of the trees that we saw that fell over happened to be in medians, mm-hmm. and he was saying that a lot of that had to do with the way that the soil had been prepared before, and he said a lot of that has been compacted because they were compacting it to make a road, and that the soil had not been loosened to the point where those roots could go down, or hadn't been maintained in a way that the roots went down. Instead, the roots went out. So when we saw them knocked over, it looked like they had kind of a coaster stuck to the bottom of them. So mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you, Charlie, what kind of prep work do you need to do with your soil underneath a tree when you're getting ready to plant it? How far do you need to loosen up the soil? And what other ways can you make sure that you can get a good, firm grip on the ground beneath your tree?
Well, typically what we suggest is when you plant a tree, you want to plant diameter-wise, usually two times that of the pot. You could go ahead and loosen the soil up another foot below where the pot's going to sit. I guess one of the tricks is when you go ahead and plant a tree, ideally you want the tree to be level with the ground. You don't want to bury the crown of the tree, the base of the trunk, because that's a good way to kill your tree. So if you don't have that much land underneath you in a median to work with, then that presents a problem where the roots can't reach down, deep into the earth and have an easier time getting blown over during a storm. If it's not the median that we're talking about, if it's your own yard, I think the best way to secure your tree in there, if all other conditions are met, is just good thorough watering where you're really watering down deep so the roots will travel further south instead of east and west.
How do you accomplish that? I mean, is that squirting a garden hose on it, or are you putting in something into the ground that will put water underneath?
A couple ways. One, if you rely on sprinklers, a lot of times they just kind of hit the surface for the grass. If you want to effectively water tree roots, you could take a hose, you could turn it onto a drip, put it down by the base of the tree and just let it run for 10, 12 minutes. And that over time will seep in deep into the ground and effectively water your tree. Another thing that we do at Echo is we use microirrigation. So instead of, again, having sprinklers that hit the entire farm, we set these little stakes up with these tiny little sprinkler heads underneath all our trees, and we leave them on for, you know, an hour, hour and a half, depending on the conditions outside. And they do an effective job at thoroughly soaking and saturating the ground. So, again, the roots have will reach down deep into the earth.
Okay. So then I'm getting concerned now. Is it possible if you're squirting like a little small little sprinkler right there at the trunk of the tree, is there any possibility of rotting that or anything, or drowning it accidentally?
If you forget to turn it off.
If you kind of go overboard?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So maximum, you're talking about an hour, hour and a half?
For, again, it depends on the time of year.
Yeah.
So in some cases, we might only do it for a half hour, some cases longer. There was a lot of drought last spring. So they were running them a lot more frequently, especially for things like bamboo, during the driest and the hottest times of the day.
Even though it rained last night, we are going into dry season, or we should be heading towards dry season. So that will probably change things. And a lot of people are going to be planting now to replace trees at the beginning of dry season. So that watering is going to be critical for a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely.
We are talking about trees, power lines, and how they coexist. You can join the conversation by giving us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Now, Pete, with the Arbor Day Foundation, I wanted to talk with you a little bit about work that you've done post-Harvey in Texas on how you're restoring and eventually replanting trees in some of the most devastated areas there. How would you say that the Harvey recovery compares to post-Irma so far in regards to the handling of trees? I mean, they saw different conditions there.
Yeah, it's really very different kinds of storms. The wind effects from hurricanes, whether you're in Rockport, Texas, on the coast down near Corpus Christi, or maybe on the Florida Gulf Coast, might have been pretty similar. Category 4 storms with very high winds are going to really destroy a lot of trees. Trees just aren't strong enough to withstand that kind of wind. But in the Houston area, what we saw was that torrential rain, up to 50 inches of rain, and widespread flooding. And flooding that lasted for, really, in some cases, that flooding has just now gone down. So trees that have been affected by floods, they look a little different, they act a little different, and their recovery is a little less well-known than trees that we see damaged from winds. You can really see the damage immediately afterwards on a tree that's been wind-damaged. And if more than half of that tree crown has been destroyed, many of those trees are not going to survive. Even if you left them in the landscape and just cleaned up the debris, they still might not survive. Well, for flooded trees, it's even harder to tell. Sometimes it'll take a whole nother growing season next year before decisions will be made about whether that tree is going to live or it's going to die. That stress of flooding can result in other challenges, insect and disease outbreaks. And that's sort of what I'll be waiting to hear from the Houston area next summer.
Yeah.
But we're still going to be trying to help plant trees in those areas.
Well, we had some areas around here that did take some serious flooding, and we actually had a significant amount of rain right before the hurricane hit, a couple of weeks before. Mm-hmm. So we had a lot of trees standing in a lot of water, but you're saying that it takes a while to become evident whether the trees are going to make it through that kind of flooding.
especially for freshwater flooding. When it's saltwater flooding, we start to see effects right away. If you have storm surge in areas where there are trees, those trees can immediately show some impact, and we know that those trees are going to be at higher risk. When it's freshwater, like rainwater or river water, it's a little harder to tell. And what our standard message is, let's give trees a chance. If they're still upright and they're not leaning in any way and at risk of further damage to life or property, we'd say hang on to those in the landscape. Let's make a decision in a little while.
Yeah, it may make it through. We have a couple calls on the line. We have Barbara from Port Charlotte who has a question. Barbara, what would you like to ask about? Barbara, are you with us? Well, it seems like we lost Barbara from Port Charlotte, but we can also check in with Louise in Charlotte. Louise, what question did you have?
Hi. I had a comment about a tree right next to a house. I know it seems like it's not a good idea, but in Hurricane Charlie, which came right through here, I had 8 trees fall on my house, a couple from the neighbors and a couple of queen palms, but I had a palm that was right next to the house, and it didn't fall because it banged and banged and banged. I guess we had 140-mile-per-hour wind, and it left a little tiny indentation where it banged. But when they're abutting the house, you know, they're not going to fall on the house, so it seems like a little safer. I just wanted to mention that. And then I had another comment. I spoke with the people down in Dade County around Homestead after Andrew. They had watched, and they said the pines were the most durable. They were just the strongest. The South Florida slash pine, the very last to fall in the wind, and I've noticed that too. They clip off at the very end. They said it wasn't until the wind was 210 miles per hour in Andrew that the pines fell or that clipped off at the top.
And I'm going to ask Charlie, have you seen that with the pines being a little bit more resilient? Is that a native tree?
I think in terms of wind resistance, the trees that have developed over time to withstand hurricane force winds would be the ones that are native to Florida. So that absolutely makes sense why they would be the last ones to go down instead of the first.
Do you find that native trees handle themselves better during hurricanes, the ones that are used to being in Florida and they've been here for a long time?
Yeah.
That seems to be the way. Are there any fruit trees that are actually native to here?
Pond apple. You can see it growing along. You can see it growing along Alligator Alley. It's part of the Annona family. It's the one Annona that I'm aware of that is native to South Florida. It's not necessarily the best for eating. I think it has some medicinal value, but technically it's a fruit.
But all the other fruit trees that we have around here aren't really native.
Most are from other parts of the world, off the top of my head.
Sorry, I don't mean to put you on the spot.
That's
there.
Okay. there's another one, pawpaws, I believe are native, but more to northern Florida.
Oh, I was just hearing something yesterday about how that's kind of become a new hipster thing. People are really into the pawpaw these days.
Maybe Pete can chime in on that.
Pete, are you finding
love the
also?
Pawpaw. Very, very. It's a wonderful tree, and I believe you're correct that it would be native to the north part of Florida.
Yeah, and I was going to ask also, Pete, have you found, though, that native plants tend to have a better chance of survival during these kinds of hurricanes?
Well, there is no doubt that there are a handful of native species that have sort of co-evolved with hurricanes. So palm trees are... the native palms are some of the most resistant to storms. And then we look at things like bald cypress and pond cypress that are extremely resilient. And then live oak is much more resilient than some of the other oak species that we might have planted in our landscapes. That's my experience from Texas anyway.
Yeah. And I was going to ask Charlie, I know that at ECHO this weekend you had an event that was working to educate people about best trees for replanting. What kind of advice were you giving people this weekend?
It was all about preparation. So everything that we've talked about here is more or less what went into the talk. When you select your tree, make sure you select the right site for it. Make sure you have a plan in regards of managing canopy size and diameter. Watch out for power lines. Watch out for your house. Watch out for things under the ground. Watch out for other trees.
What did people tend to be interested in? Were they gravitating maybe towards mangoes, or what were you seeing people looking for? Were they wanting to replace the old oaks that fell over with more fruit trees?
Well, a lot of the trees that were lost due to the rainfall and the flooding, avocados are pretty susceptible to dying off if they have to sit in water for more than a day or two. And I would say the most common story I heard was the loss of avocado trees, and they wanted to replace them with avocado trees. So we definitely sold a lot in that area and made the recommendation that when you plant your avocado tree, find the highest and driest area in your yard. Sometimes we don't know that until you have that storm that comes around every 10 years or 12 years like this one did. But now that we do know that and we do have that information, seek out that area that has good draining sand, good draining soil, and is not susceptible to flooding after a heavy rainfall.
Mm-hmm. And then Karen Ryan with LCEC, does the electric company have a preferred tree height and clearance for its power lines? Is there a place where people can go maybe online to see all the specifications that the power companies would like to see people observe?
Yes, and actually Pete referenced it with the Arbor Day Foundation. They have a great graphic, and it talks about the types of trees and the types of power lines and how much clearance should be given so that your tree doesn't have to be trimmed to those standards, and also so that you can stay safe around those trees.
Mm-hmm. And how often do you think do you want people to get out there and take a look at their trees? Do they need to check it out at least once a year?
Definitely once a year in our area, I think even more so. And again, it goes back to selecting the right tree and putting it in the right place. Some trees have a higher growth rate, so those trees you would have to watch, you know, more closely. But really, if they select the right tree, once or twice a year should be plenty for them to review it.
Mm-hmm. And Pete Smith with the Arbor Day Foundation, can you tell me a little bit about Tree City USA and that designation?
Well, Tree City USA is a great program. It's one of our signature community forestry programs. And we've been doing it now. This is the 42nd year of giving recognition to communities. There are a handful right there in your area. Fort Myers has been a Tree City for 25 years and Naples for 20 years. And this is a program that provides some direction, some assistance, and some national recognition for communities. It really sets communities apart from one another as they're competing for jobs, resources, all sorts of things. And it really is a bellwether for whether a community cares about its trees. It sets out four pretty strict standards for what a city has to maintain every year, from celebrating Arbor Day to investing at least $2 per capita in public trees. They have to have an ordinance, and they have to have someone responsible for those trees. And just setting out those key standards that allow a community to build a foundation for an urban forestry program is just critical. So if there are listeners on your show that live in a community that isn't a Tree City USA, they should contact their local council representatives and find out why not.
Yeah, and I think people may be a little bit shy about trees after a hurricane, but as we're hearing on the show, there seems to be a way of being a tree city and then keeping power lines from becoming vulnerable.
This is the best time to think about how to build that better mousetrap. We can do better than we've done in the past. And you're right, there was damage to power lines and other infrastructure. I will say, just for perspective, that Category 4 winds are pretty extreme, and trees are going to always be vulnerable to toppling or breaking apart in winds like that. But that doesn't mean we can't plant a diverse urban forest that is well-placed, well-maintained, and can reduce the damage in the future.
Exactly. Well, we're going to have to leave it there for now, but I want to thank our guest, Charlie Thibodeau. He's the tree specialist from ECHO. Thanks so much for your suggestion for the fruit trees. That's a great idea.
Thank you for having me.
We're calling it a silver bullet, I think. Right, Karen Ryan?
That's right.
Thanks so much from Lee County Electrical Cooperative. And I also want to thank Pete Smith with the Arbor Day Foundation for joining us today. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up, FGCU has been around for 20 years now, about as long as a humanitarian group, which has allowed student-run initiatives to tackle medical, ecological, and social needs in the Peruvian Amazon. After all this time, though, the two may be partnering up through FGCU's newly established Honors College. That conversation's next. You're listening to Gulf Coast Live on WGCU. Now we turn to our pledge drive, where you have an opportunity to support programming like this.